You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday the 22nd of February 2022, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, things are heating up over Ukraine's way, aren't they? It's very interesting the way that this is being reported on, the difference between the way it's reported in Russia and the way it's reported in the West, and I'm really struck by similarities to what happened at the start of World War II. So I thought maybe we could get into some of those today. Just an update of what's been happening. Yesterday, Russia recognized Donetsk and Luhansk as independent republics. And basically, Donetsk and Luhansk have been trying to get recognized as independent republics since the Maidan Revolution. And if we go back to 2014, there was a color revolution in Ukraine, which took place in Kiev. And the government, the official government, were overthrown. And they were violently overthrown. There were police officers that were murdered. There were snipers, just incredible scenes of violence that we saw taking place in Kiev. And a new regime was put in place, and they were all oligarchs. There was Petro Poroshenko, Porky Poroshenko, the chocolate king. There was Arseniy Yatsenyuk, who I believe is now being investigated for corruption. We had Victoria Nuland in America talking about how much money it cost to set this revolution up. And it was quite clear that the people that had been put in power were puppets of America, basically. It was an attempt to sever Ukraine's relations with Russia, in the same way that we've seen color revolutions taking place elsewhere. And basically, the West backs one of the opposition groups in a country that it wants to destabilize, and then that group pushes for revolution, and things get extremely violent. The most recent place that we saw this happen was in Kazakhstan, when they were supposed to just be protesting over petrol prices, and they ended up setting fire to buildings and shooting people, and peacekeepers had to go in there and put the unrest down, and they were described as terrorists. And you can compare this to what's going on in Canada, where you have a peaceful protest and there's no shooting, there's no fires being set, there's bouncy castles and kids around, and Trudeau declares that he needs to bring in the Emergency Powers Act and pretty much declares that those people are terrorists. And then you see what happens in Kazakhstan, where you actually do have terrorists, and the head of the government there says, well, we have terrorists, we need to stop this. And luckily, they had a deal with Belarus and with Russia that if anything like that happened, the other countries would send in peacekeeping troops to put down the color revolution. Now, they didn't have that deal when this happened in Ukraine in 2014. So there was a massive load of violence in Kiev. A new government was put in place that wanted to join the EU of all things. And the rest of the country were not best pleased about this. The rest of the country did not want to get rid of the government. The rest of the country were quite happy with cordial relations with Russia. And a large part of the country is actually ethnically Russian rather than ethnically Ukrainian. Now, there really isn't that much difference between Ukrainians and Russians. I guess it's probably similar to the difference between the Welsh and the English, maybe not even as much difference as that. But because you essentially had this revolution taking place in the capital, and the people in the capital deciding what they wanted Ukraine to do, it wasn't the same as what the people outside of the capital were wanting to do. I mean, it's rather as if the people in London decided to have a coup and decided to pivot towards China or something. And the rest of the country would be saying, well, we don't want to do this. And Wales might say, well, we don't want to do this. And Scotland might say, well, we don't want to do this. We don't want to be loyal to China. I mean, that's as bizarre as it was for Ukraine to say that they want to now be a part of the EU and join NASA. So in Crimea, which had been built up particularly by Russia, lots of Russian investment there, and I believe that Russia had a naval base there as well, Sevastopol. So, of course, Russia has to secure Crimea, and Crimea was 95% Russian anyway. And in Crimea, they had a referendum, and they said, do you want to be a part of Ukraine's new government, with the new government in Kiev, and do you want to be a part of the EU, or would you rather be a part of Russia? So they had a vote there, a peaceful vote, as opposed to a violent revolution, which took place in Kiev, and they said, well, we want to join Russia. And Russia said, okay, we will honour your referendum. And surely they had a right to do that. If Kiev has a right to change the government, then surely the Crimeans have a right to change their government as well. Only in Crimea, they did it peacefully. They just had a referendum. So, of course, Ukraine was not happy about this. And Ukraine declared that Crimea had been invaded and had been taken over by Russia, when the fact of the matter is the Crimeans invited the Russians to come in, and their standard of living was raised incredibly. I can remember at the time reading about it, and their pensions, something like they trebled, welfare went up. I mean, the standard of living in Russia is much, much higher than it is in Ukraine, as Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson has spoken about many times. Ukraine is pretty much close to being a third world country. And when you compare it to the standard of living they have in Russia, I mean, it's just no comparison, really. So then we get to Donetsk and Luhansk, and both of them wanted to do the same thing as Crimea. They wanted to join Russia. But Russia said, well, hang on a minute. We've got Crimea. We want to see what happens. We want Ukraine to actually give up that part of the country. If you want to leave Ukraine, which Donetsk and Luhansk did want to do, they wanted to be independent rather than actually be a part of Russia, I think. Then Russia said, well, Ukraine has got to agree to this. And also what was happening then, because Luhansk and Donetsk said that they wanted to be separate from the Ukraine, that there started to be reprisals against the Russians. Ukraine banned the speaking of Russian, banned the teaching of Russian in schools, banned Russian from being spoken in shops. And this in itself is very, very similar to what happened at the start of World War II, when there was a German settlement, which was Danzig, and it had always been German, but it was given to Poland at the end of World War I. And the Poles started banning the Germans from speaking German. They banned the Germans from teaching German in their schools, and they started mistreating the Germans. And this was really what started off World War II, because Hitler had to go in and rescue these Germans because they were being slaughtered. And thousands of them were going over the border and were staying in camps in Germany. And we see exactly the same thing happening now in Ukraine. We see that just over the weekend, 60,000 refugees from the Donbass region, which is the two independent republics, had to go into Russia to claim asylum. The same as the residents of Danzig had to go into Germany to claim asylum. And what do you do when your people are being attacked in the country that they live in? Well, of course, you have to stand up for your people. Hitler went into Poland to rescue the Germans that were in Danzig. And a similar thing has happened here. And this isn't the only parallel that we can draw. I mean, before the Poles started mistreating these Germans, Britain went to Poland and essentially wrote Poland what is called a blank check and said, you can do whatever you like to provoke the Germans and we will back you. If the Germans dare to come into Poland, then we will come in on your side in a war. And we essentially see the same thing happening here. We see Ukraine being told, you can poke the Russian bear with a stick as much as you like, and if the Russians come in, we will back you. They've said that they can't back them with NATO, but what they will do is they'll give them weapons, they'll give them training. They're doing all they can to provoke Russia, really. So to get back to Donetsk and Lugansk, they set up their independent republics. They said, we wish to be independent. And they had a war with Ukraine. And there ended up being a ceasefire, and there ended up being a no man's land. And we ended up with the Minsk Accords. And the Minsk Accords was supposed to be a way of ensuring peace between Ukraine and between these independent republics. And one of the conditions of the Minsk Accords were that Ukraine would recognize them as independent republics. And Ukraine has not recognized them as independent republics. Now, Biden has been talking about Russia is going to invade the Ukraine. And we've all been thinking, well, why would Russia want to invade the Ukraine? It's a third world country. What possible benefit would that be to Russia? And of course, the truth is, it's not that Russia wants to invade Ukraine. It's that there are all these ethnic Russians that are in Donetsk and Lugansk that are being mistreated by the Ukrainians. Now, with all this talk of there's going to be an invasion, Biden said to Americans last week, all Americans have to get out of Ukraine. They have to leave Ukraine. And the minute the American observers of the ceasefire between Donetsk and Ukraine left the country, Ukraine started shelling the Donbass region again. And bombs started going off and shells started hitting buildings, which is why there were 60,000 refugees leaving that region to go into Russia. And I've seen interviews on the BBC where they've been accusing Putin of doing this. They've been accusing, this is apparently a false flag, and Putin has been bombing the Donbass region so that the Donbass people will flee into Russia to give him an excuse to go into the Donbass region. I mean, that's the narrative that we're being told over here in Britain. Of course, if you switch the channel over to RT, you can see what the Russian side of it is. And they try to be a lot more objective than the journalists at the BBC are. And they point out that this shelling began after the observers left. And the Russians had to put on a train service because the trains haven't actually left from the Donbass to Russia since the start of all these problems. So they had to put on the train service again. And all these refugees were fleeing into the country. So what is Putin going to do when thousands of ethnic Russians are fleeing from a region just over the border because their lives are being threatened by the Ukrainian forces? And on the other side of the no man's land outside Donbass, there's 110,000 Ukrainian troops there. And they're firing at that region. And this is another thing that we're not being told. We were told that Putin was amassing 150,000 Russian troops on the border of Ukraine. And the border of Ukraine is actually Russia. So Russia has 150,000 troops at its border with the weapons pointing at Ukraine. Ukraine has 110,000 troops at the Donbass border with the weapons pointing at the ethnic Russians in the Donbass region. So that's the reason why the troops were there. And we were thinking, well, it's probably to do with Crimea, because you also have this issue where, according to the West, Crimea still belongs to Ukraine. Never mind the fact that it belonged to Russia for many, many, many years. I mean, parts of Ukraine were only given to them by Stalin. I mean, the actual city of Donetsk used to be called Stalin, named after Stalin. And according to the West, Crimea still belongs to Ukraine. Ukraine claims that Crimea still belongs to them, and they want to get it back. And to Russia, Crimea is now a part of Russia again. And if Ukraine says that they want to go and take Crimea, they're effectively saying we want to invade Russia. So if you have a country that wants to invade Russia, that then wants to join NATO, and you have NATO saying, we think that this country is going to join us, that means that as soon as Ukraine joins NATO, NATO will be at war with Russia. And if NATO is at war with Russia, then Russia is going to want to get the first strike in. And they're not, they've said that, you know, they're not frightened to use nuclear weapons. The instant Ukraine joins NATO, they will have to use nuclear weapons, because otherwise NATO will invade Russia, basically to take Crimea back. So the source of this problem, the root of it, is interfering in Ukraine's politics. It's America interfering in Ukraine's politics, and NATO doing the same. And it's pushed Putin into a position where he really doesn't want to be. And he's recognized these republics as independent, which is what these republics wanted. And once they are recognized as independent, then they have the right to invite whoever they like to come into their country. We're being told here that it's an invasion of Poland. But the people in the Donbass region don't see it as an invasion. They invited the Russians in. They had fireworks flying up, lighting up the night sky. They were waving flags. This is what they've been praying for the last 8 years, is that they would be recognized as independent republics and they would be able to make their own relations with Russia. And up until now, Russia has not allowed them to do that. Ukraine has cut them off from all supplies from the minute they said that they wanted to be self-governing. The minute they said, we want to do the same thing that you've done in Kiev and we want to be self-governing, change our government, Ukraine cut them off from all supplies. So Russia has been supplying them. This is why they say they are Russian-backed separatists, because if Russia wasn't actually supplying them, they would have no fuel and they would have no food. Now, they've invited the Russians in as peacekeepers to stop Ukraine from shelling their city, basically. And Putin said, we will be sending in a peacekeeping force. And that is how it was reported on at first. And then the mainstream media changed that to Putin is sending troops in. But they are there as peacekeepers. They're there to stop the shelling of the Russian people. And another parallel that we can draw here is when Hitler went into Austria. And in Austria, they held a referendum. Do you wish to be reunified with Germany? And I forget what the results of the referendum were. Something like 99% of people wanted to reunify with Germany. Hitler drove across the bridge into Austria, started out early in the morning with a huge motorcade. And as they drove into Austria, people were throwing flowers out of the windows. And there were literally hundreds of thousands of people gathered in that square, climbing up the lampposts, cheering. An incredible vibe, incredible happiness evident on everybody's faces. And that was reported in the West that Hitler has invaded Austria. Hitler has invaded Austria because the Austrians invited him in. So what we're seeing here happen now is pretty similar, isn't it? The Donbass region invite Putin in, Russia in, and to keep the peace as peacekeepers. And we're told that the Donbass has been invaded by Russia. Ukraine has been invaded by the Russians. So we can see in real time at the moment exactly how these lies were spread about the start of World War One. I mean, it's very obvious what they did. Back then, we didn't really have the independent media that we have now. We didn't have the ability to see what was really going on. And the newspapers and the cinema films would have portrayed it as Hitler invading Austria. But when you look into it, when you look into the history of it, you find out that there was this referendum. Hitler didn't invade Austria. And you find out that when he went into Poland, it was because of provocations by Poland. It was because they were mistreating the German refugees. And we've been mentioning this before. I have mentioned this before, and I've just been hoping that Putin had the patience not to go into Ukraine in the same way that Hitler went into Poland. And it does look like he has had the patience to do that. I mean, he's just sent in these peacekeeping troops. But this is why the West has been saying Putin is going to invade Ukraine. It's because they're getting the Ukrainians to mistreat the Russians. So they're trying to make it so that Putin's got no option but to invade Ukraine to protect the Russians. So thankfully, he hasn't done that. I mean, these republics, the self-professed republics, independent republics, they were the ones that asked Russia to come in to protect them. Now, if Ukraine had only recognized these republics as independent, as they were supposed to do, according to the Minsk Accords, then things might have been different. If only Ukraine had stopped shelling the ethnic Russians that lived there. I mean, really, this shows that even if you are very close to another people group biologically, if you're living in the same territory, sharing the same territory, there's going to be fallings out. What your people group may think is best for it may not necessarily be what the other people group think is best for it. I mean, essentially, you've got the people in Kiev that want to pivot towards the EU and America, and then you've got the people in the east of the country who want to stay with Russia. So the country is being torn apart because you have these two different ethnic groups that are living there, even though they're very close. I mean, it's similar to the Irish and the English. They're two very, very close groups together, and yet we had all the troubles in Ireland. We've had all these problems with the English and the Welsh over the years. It's taken hundreds of years to smooth those problems over. And yet we think today that it's a good idea to import people groups into our country that are vastly different from our own. And then we act surprised when things all fall apart and there is discord and people aren't getting on and there isn't a sense of community. I mean, it's quite amazing when you look at the standard of living that Russia has, that the whole of Ukraine isn't up in arms at Kiev and what they've done by pivoting towards America. And to look at this from the European point of view, from the countries in Europe, I mean, this is quite concerning. Not so much that there's a war going on that's in part of Europe, because that's been going on now for 8 years, but because if the gas supplies are interrupted and we get all our gas from Russia, if the gas supplies are interrupted, then we're not going to have any heating. So it's in our best interests not to stir this situation up, not to make it any worse. And yet what we see is Boris Johnson making the situation worse. We see Joe Biden making the situation worse. We see NATO refusing to even acknowledge the genuine concerns that Russia has about security. I mean, if you're going to have your main opponent parking all his weapons on your border pointed at you, then obviously that is going to be quite concerning, isn't it? I mean, the way that it was before, there was like this no man's land between NATO and Russia, which was Ukraine. And now these Baltic states are now part of NATO, and they're very close to Russia as well. And it's not like there's anything similar that's in South America. It's not like just over the American border with Mexico, there are nuclear weapons pointing at Washington. There's nothing comparable to what America is doing to Russia. And Russia did have all these agreements with NATO that NATO was not going to expand, and NATO is just going to stay where it was. And they've been pointing these out. And they're not just verbal agreements. They are part of treaties, and NATO saying that it's not going to strengthen one country's defence at the expense of another country's defence. And if they strengthen Ukraine's defence by putting all these weapons there, pointing them at Russia, they are doing that at the expense of Russia. And they're also causing all this discord in the country. I mean, up until all these problems, the Russians and the Ukrainians used to get on well. They were like brother nations, the same as the Russians get on well with the Belarusians. They're all from the same essential Russian stock, basically. I mean, Kiev, the Kievan Rus, that's where Russia came from, is from Kiev. It was always a part of Russia. The word Ukraine itself means the borderland. It's like the borderland of Russia. And the Soviet Union ended up separating them off, and they've built up this national identity really since then. Even though they've always been a separate ethnic group, they've always been close to Russia, not pointing towards Europe. And another thing that's involved in this, another part of this, is of course the Holodomor. And the Holodomor is when the Soviet Union deliberately starved the Ukrainians in order to collectivize the farms and to take all the grain to make payments on loans to the West, basically. And even that is now being used on BBC programs to stir up hatred against the Russians and saying it was the Russians that did this and it was the Soviet Union that did this. It wasn't the Russians that did this. And today, on one of the talk shows on Channel 5, when they were talking about this, they had the hammer and the sickle over Russia. And they were saying, well, Russia is still communist and Putin is trying to keep communism going. And that is the complete opposite of the truth. It's the West that has kept communism going. That's why they gave it up in the East, because they'd taken over in the West. They had no more need for the East. They had completely destroyed Russia. I mean, it's quite incredible the way that Russia has managed to pull herself back on her feet again. And the reason for that really is because of the church, I think, that helped them to regain their sense of identity. They're a very strongly traditionalist Christian country with strongly traditionalist values. And it's these values that is really at the heart of this. And we can see this when we listen to the media reports. They're now openly talking about liberal democracy and how important it is. And they're claiming that Putin is a dictator and he has all these tyrannical values that he's forcing on his people. And basically all he has is traditionalist values that the people are happy with and that the people want. They don't want their little boys to be taught that they're little girls. They don't want them to be encouraged to mutilate their genitals. They don't want gay pride parades in Moscow. They don't want them in Ukraine either. There was a gay pride parade in Kiev, and the farmers slung all this slurry at it from their tractors to show that they did not support this. And this is the crazy thing. Ukraine is also a traditionalist country, and yet its leaders are saying that they want to join the EU. Well, if you have a nationalist revolution, and that was the way that it was portrayed, it was portrayed as if it was nationalists that were doing this, they would not have then wanted to join the EU. And really, this is another one of the most bizarre parts of this, is the fact that it was these neo-Nazi groups that were essentially taking down the government in Kiev so that it could be replaced with a government that was pro-gay pride and pro the EU. And of course, in Russia, this was portrayed as, well, these are terrible people because Russia fought against Germany. Russia fought against the National Socialists in Germany, and the people that are taking over in Kiev are supportive of that. And they weren't supportive of that. I mean, they were just nasty types, I think, that idolize Adolf Hitler for the Hollywood image that there is of him, because it's hardly National Socialists to be promoting the European Union and be promoting everything that the European Union stands for, and mass immigration and equality, and everybody is all the same. The nationalists in Ukraine ended up being used, I guess, because they took this foreign money. They took this foreign money from America to help their organizations and help their movement. And then they were used to take out the government and put in this new one, which is basically selling off the Ukraine and selling out the traditions of the country. So it's all very interesting what's happening, and it's a great shame that Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson isn't here to talk about it. Of course, he's having a well-earned holiday while he's on his honeymoon with his wife, and we wish him all the best. But all of this really couldn't have happened at a worse time, really, and I'm sure he's going to have lots to say on it when he comes back Anyway, that's my thoughts on the present situation in Ukraine and Russia. I could probably go on for much longer, but we shall leave that here for today. Thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.